Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime stories brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. We'll hear first this week from Rogues Gallery, their episode from July 14th, 1946, titled Where There's a Will, There's a Murder. After that, it's Inspector Thorne and the Two Fiancés Murder Case, their episode from September 13th, 1951.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Man, why let a song be your style, use Fitch Shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, use Fitch Shampoo.
The F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo and Ideal Hair Tonic, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Speaking. Business was booming like California real estate, and I was lending my magnificent talents to about a half a dozen different investigations on this day I'm going to tell you about. I was as happy as a cat in a canary cage when, on my way back from lunch, I stopped at the cigar stand in the lobby of my building to buy a packet of cigarettes. Herb Hyde, the character who owns and operates that cough emporium when he's not playing gin rummy with me and cheating, gave me a big wink. Herb's a little guy who is at all times conversant with the score, who is playing, and whether the game is fixed or not. He's slightly bigger than the fox, twice as smart, and that balding gray head of his contains more pertinent knowledge than your nearest library. When he slyly closed his left optic and just as slyly opened it again, I bent my manly torso over the counter and gave him my undivided attention.
Hey, Rogue, hey, you got company, Rogie. Big stuff.
Yeah, somebody waiting in the office?
Yeah, a couple of $1 million waiting up there. Angela Mullins.
Angela Mullins?
Yeah, that's right. That rates a whistle from anyone. She's got plenty of dough, Rogie, money. And if she's looking for a private investigator, something's up. But look, after you shake hands with her, be sure to count your fingers.
Yeah, I understand she throws a dough around like an armless woman.
Yeah, she inherited a cool million when her husband kicked the bucket. And she's running up to double now by sharp deals. You know, I understand she killed her husband with her meanness. Wouldn't even give him enough to eat. She's got a niece and a nephew, her only living relative. Niece lives with her. Nephew is married and lives in San Francisco. She won't give either of them a dime. Meanest woman in the world. She's 67. She's
Look,
got...
Herb, how do you know all these things? What have you been doing, making study of the old girl just in case she ever dropped in to talk with me?
Oh, you know how it is, Rogie. Running a place like this, you get all the gossip.
Oh, Herb, you're the poor man's Winchell. You store up information like a squirrel stores up nuts.
Yeah. Oh, no. You see, I'm just a dummy. Oh, I wouldn't be running a little stand like this. I'd have a big one, big. You know, in a better building.
How about some gin rummy in my apartment tonight, huh?
Sure, yeah, sure. I'll be over at 9.
I'll admit that I was running a high fever in my curiosity department during the elevator ride which whisked me toward my interview with Angela Mullins. The old lady was a legend in our town. She was irascible, mean, miserly, and cruel. She drove the only remaining electric car in the world and drove it wide open right through the heaviest traffic. She had a sea bag full of residence mortgages and took great personal delight in foreclosing them. Grand girl. She was waiting in my outer office, black bonnet tied under her chin, black alpaca dress, shiny with age, low-heeled button shoes, and gimlet eyes.
You, Richard Rogue, the investigator?
Yes.
You don't look as smart as the newspaper stories about you sound.
Well, I'm quite a bit brighter than I look.
Well, I hope so. You know who I am?
Yes, of course. You're Mrs. Angela Mullins.
That's right. I suppose you think I'm a little crazy. Most people do. You think I'm a miserly old hag.
You know, I hardly ever think about it. Sit down, please, Mrs. Mullins.
Yeah, thanks. I will. I want to talk with you, Rogue, but first I want to know what your charges are.
Well, it depends on the case. You tell me what you want me to do, and I'll name my price. If you want me badly enough, you'll pay it. If you don't, I've lost nothing but time. Now, what do you want me to do?
Young man, I've done business with people like you for over half a century. I don't tell my problems until I get a price.
I've got great respect for the sanctity of womanhood and for old age. So I'm not going to ask you to leave until you're rested.
If you're as clever as you think you are, you can accomplish what I want you to do in 24 hours. What are your charges for 24 hours?
Depends on the work. If it's as simple as you say it is, it'll cost you, $500 for the first 24 hours.
$500?
Take it or leave it.
I'll take it. Mr. Rogue, I want you to find out who it was who stole my will.
Stole your will?
Yes. A few weeks ago, I was supposed to die. A half-witted doctor who's been taking care of me for many years told me I was going to die. My relatives had a great celebration, I suppose. I fooled them, though. I lived.
Yes, I see you did. What were you supposed to die of?
My heart. I'm supposed to have a bad heart. Why, it's as strong and steady as yours. I feel fine. But that fool doctor keeps warning me to take care of myself. Trying to make an invalid of me, Mr. Rogue.
Look, if you had a heart attack 2 weeks ago, shouldn't you be home in bed?
I came down to see my dentist. He's here in your building. I had a tooth bothering me. That was my excuse for getting out of the house without my spying niece knowing I was coming down to see you. Somebody stole my will, Mr. Rogue. And if I died today, I would die intestate. My money would all go to my only living relatives. A niece whom I loathe and a nephew whom I detest. Now, tomorrow I'm going to see my lawyer and write another one, just like the one which was stolen.
I see. Now, what disposition did the will make of your estate?
I left $5,000 to each of those helpless little fools, and all the rest to a missionary society.
You think it was either your niece or your nephew who stole the will?
And who else would have any interest in it? I kept it in a strong box under my bed. It's gone now, strong box and all. Here's your $500. Whoever stole that will expected me to die. They were disappointed the last time, Mr. Rogue, and now I don't know what they'll do next.
All right. Now, your nephew lives in San Francisco, doesn't he?
Yes. How did you know that?
Well, I'm an investigator. I try to keep informed on everything. Was your nephew in town at the time the will disappeared?
He was. He was by my bedside waiting for me to die and arguing with me.
Hmm? I beg your pardon, Mr. Rogue. Angela, you should be at home in bed. I told you that when you left my office.
And I told you I wasn't going there until I took care of some business, Sam. This is my dentist, Mr. Rogue, Samuel Hall.
Oh, yes, we've passed the lobby several times, shared a few elevators. How are you, Dr. Hall?
Fine, thank you. Angela, I want you to go right
home. Sam, if you don't stop ordering me around,
I'm telling you, for your own good. Go home now. I'll see you there tonight. And if that new crown I install gives you any
trouble. Remember this, Mr. Rogue. Our discussion has been strictly private. Now, if you'll help me out of this chair, I'll go home.
Of course.
Yes. I'll see you both at 8 o'clock this evening at my home.
I'll be there. That $500 check in my pocket did its best to pay for the depression I felt that afternoon. And it came in second. I didn't like Angela Mullins. I called up some of the old-timers around the banks and the newspapers in town to put the bite on them for some information about the old girl. And the best any of them could say for her was that she had been the best speller in the third grade. Evidently, she'd done nothing decent since. My conscience told me to give back the five bills and bow out of the case. $500 is a lot of money. But I have to shave every morning, and when I shave, I have to look at myself. So I decided to turn the case down. When I arrived in front of the dilapidated old mansion where Angela Mullins lived and counted her money, there were two other cars in the driveway. One was an old model coupe with the earmarks of hard use. The other was a shiny sedan with the insignia of a doctor on it. It was just 8 o'clock as I went up the creaky steps across the porch and knocked with the old-fashioned knocker.
Hello, Mr. Rogue. I'm afraid we're too late.
What do you mean we're too late, Dr. Hall? I'm right on time.
We're too late, Mr. Rogue. Angela had a heart attack at 6 o'clock. She's dead.
We'll continue our story in just a moment. First, sometimes after we've talked about Fitch shampoo, someone will remark, "Yes, but I still don't see how a shampoo will remove dandruff." Well, there are really two reasons. The first lies in the nature of dandruff itself. Contrary to many ideas, scientists do not consider dandruff to be a disease, but a natural scalp condition. Therefore, dandruff has to be removed, not cured. The second reason is that Fitch shampoo removes dandruff for the first application. And this means not only loose dandruff, but the kind that clings to the scalp as well. For Fitch shampoo penetrates the thousands of tiny hair openings on the scalp, cleansing them thoroughly and dissolving every trace of dandruff. Ask for a big economical bottle of Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug or toilet goods counter, or have a professional application at your barber or beauty shop. Remember, Fitch is the only shampoo made whose guarantee to remove dandruff is backed by one of the world's largest insurance firms. Use it regularly each week. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Angela Mullins was dead. Whoever had lifted that strong box containing her will from under her bed had made millionaires of the only two living relatives the old lady left behind. I had accepted a $500 fee for finding out who the strong box lifter was. When I walked into the house, the nephew, Paul Warner, the niece, Claire Mullins, and Dr. Hall, the dentist, were there. Paul and Claire were in the living room when Dr. Hall ushered me in. Claire was as stunning as a blackjack behind the ear and was the lyrics to every love song. She was sitting in the big old-fashioned chair, crying. Paul was standing in front of the fireplace, his rugged face caricatured into a sad scowl. Dr. Hall introduced me.
Claire, this is Richard Rogue, private investigator. Claire Mullins, Mr. Rogue.
How do you do?
Hello.
And this is Paul Warner, Mr. Rogue.
I'm glad to know you, Warner.
Thanks.
Dr. Stevens is still upstairs, Mr. Rogue. He'll be here in a moment, I suppose.
May I ask what your business is here at this time, Mr. Rogue?
Well, your aunt commissioned me this afternoon to do a job for her.
She doesn't need any jobs done for her now. She's dead.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry.
You're sorry? Huh. I'm not.
Paul, don't say that. After all, she was your mother's sister.
Sorry, Claire, but I can't be hypocritical. The only reason I'm sorry she's dead is I wanted to talk with her tonight. I wanted to try again to borrow some money from her.
And don't worry about that, Paul. I can help you out with the amount you want.
Mr. Rogue, I think you'd better come back some other time.
Your aunt's death doesn't end my job for her, Miss Mullins.
What do you mean, Rogue?
Well, I still have to find out who stole her will from under her bed when she had her last heart attack.
Her will?
Yes, she came to see me about that this afternoon.
You mean something has happened to that will, the one that left everything to that mission in Tibet or someplace? Has she written another will?
No, not that I know of. She said she was going to make a new one tomorrow. Do you know anything about the missing will, Mr. Warner?
No. Are you accusing me of this theft, Rogue?
I'm not accusing anybody at the moment. But there were only two people in the world who stood to win by the disappearance of that will.
I don't understand what you mean, Mr. Rogue.
If your aunt died without leaving a will, her estate will be divided between her living heirs. That's you and Warner.
Ah, that's right, Claire. Ha-ha! We're rich!
Oh, Paul, I...
Mr. Rogue, I don't think this is quite the time to discuss the affair of the missing will.
I would like to talk to the doctor on the case. You'll excuse me, please.
Why do you want to talk to Dr. Stevens, Rogue?
Because I think, under the circumstances, that he should be very sure that death was caused by unaided heart failure before he signs that death certificate. Mrs. Mullins was afraid of an attempt on her life.
You think one of us murdered her for money?
It's been done before. I'm not saying it was done this time, but I think there should be an autopsy to protect the heirs from suspicion. As long as neither of you had anything to do with your aunt's death, I'm sure you'll agree that such a procedure is for your protection.
Did I hear talk of an autopsy in here?
Oh, you, Dr. Stevens?
Yes. This is Richard Rogue, the private investigator, Dr. Stevens.
Oh, yes, Mr. Rogue. Could I help you in any way?
I'm working for the late Mrs. Mullins. Doctor, are you positive that her death was due to a heart attack?
Are you questioning my knowledge of my profession, Mr. Rogue?
No, I'm merely asking you a question, Doctor. Under the circumstances surrounding the death of Mrs. Mullins, there is a possibility of murder. I'm sure you wouldn't care to assist a murderer.
Murderer? Well, I certainly would not. You think Mrs. Mullins was murdered?
Well, I think it's possible. I'm going to tell the facts as I know them to the police. And I also am going to suggest an autopsy.
That's a lot of foolishness, Mr. Rogue. And I shall so inform the police.
You're willing to say that only heart failure could have caused Mrs. Mullins' death?
Mr. Rogue, my diagnosis is heart failure. Good day.
I left and called Urban from the nearest drugstore and gave him a quick pitch on the case. He owed and awed a little bit and finally decided he'd talk with the commissioner about an autopsy. I remembered my gin rummy date with Herb Hyde, so I told Urban to call me at home later that night. I didn't get the call. When I got home, somebody was waiting for me. I opened the door.
Oh!
Oh, and the world caved in. I fell into a great void. I fell and fell and fell into a blackness so heavy it felt like velvet against my skin. I fell for centuries before the blast hit and the blackness was shattered with zigzagging red, blue, and yellow lights.
And I was picked up in a blast so strong that it shot me up into the heavens at a speed faster than light. I opened my eyes and saw Cloud 8, my home away from home. I called Ugor. Ugor! Ugor!
I'm coming, Rogie! I'm coming! Put down your flaps, Chiefy! You're coming in for a landing!
Oh, Ugor, somebody hit me.
You're making an understatement! That's not like you, Chiefy! Somebody beat your brains out!
Oh, it's so good to be here on Cloud 8. It's so peaceful. And if you'd shut up, it'd be so quiet.
Hey, Rogie, you were a little late tonight. I thought maybe you were going to get by without coming up.
Oh, no, no. Who hit me?
Well, somebody did, Chiefy. Now you've got to get to work. You got to get back downstairs.
Oh, don't mention it. I'm staying up here a good long time. I'm kind of sick.
You won't feel any better until you get downstairs, Rogie. Now, come on. Over the side with you.
No. No, Ugor.
Stop hanging on, Chiefy. Ugor knows best. You have to go back downstairs.
But I've been sick.
Oh, no. Over you go. Over the side. There. So long, Rogie.
Oh, for the love of Mike, Rogie.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. What do you want?
Rogie, it's Herb Hyde. Remember our Gene Rummy date?
Oh, it's you, Al. Hi, Herb.
Fine. Hey, what's the matter, Rogie? What happened to you?
Well, isn't that pretty obvious?
Yeah, sure is. Here, take a drink of this water.
No, get me a brandy. There's some over there in that cabinet.
Sure. Can you see now?
Of course I can see. What have I got to look at?
There's a note here.
Yeah? Oh, now, let me have it.
Rogie, somebody wants to get rid of you.
Hmm? Huh? Oh. Well, it just says, get out of town. Oh, it's not even signed.
Look at your place. All torn to the devil. Somebody was looking for something. Who do you suppose it was, Rogie?
Who knows? There are plenty of people who would like to see me move out of town. Get Urban on the phone, will you? Tell him to come over here.
Sure. I'll get him right away.
Every nerve in my head was doing the Highland Fling to the tune of the anvil chorus as I lay there and tried to figure out who it was that slipped me that lead pipe sleeping pill. I was working on a half dozen cases, and I didn't know which one of them had enough dynamite in it to cause the mayhem. Herb Hyde called Urban. We sat there and played Gin Rummy until Urban arrived. The part of my mind which was still working was on my troubles, and Herb's was on the cards. I was 370 behind when the door opened and Urban walked in.
Well, what happened to you, Rogie?
Oh, what a question.
Somebody hit him on the head.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of shook the place down a little, too, didn't they, Rogie?
Yeah, Urban, you know all the cases I'm mixed up in at the moment. Where am I near enough to a pinch to cause somebody to bend the plumbing over my head?
Well, we ordered that autopsy on Angela Mullins, as you asked us to.
Angela Mullins? She dead?
Yeah, what did you find out, Urban?
It was a good tip, Rogie. She'd been fed enough poison to kill an elephant.
Poison, huh?
That's right. Poisoned with cyanide.
We'll return to our story in just a moment. First, a word to the ladies. A beautiful woman is like a symphony, care and technique and details adding up to a lovely theme. That's why millions of beauty-wise women choose Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo for their hair grooming. Soft, lustrous hair is a beauty detail they've learned to value. Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo cleanses the hair gently and efficiently with its mounds of snowy lather. And while it's cleansing, Fitch Shampoo is also reconditioning the hair and scalp. This reconditioning action gives the hair strands greater elasticity, so your hair will take a wave better and hold it longer. And when you use Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo, notice how quickly and easily it rinses out, leaving your hair with a satiny texture, sparkling with natural color highlights. Make Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo your regular aid to lovely, shining hair. Always ask for Fitch, spelled F-I-T-C-H. Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
For some reason or other, I was expecting Urban to crack that news about the death of Angela Mullins being murdered. One of my famous hunches had whispered that suspicion to my subconscious as soon as I'd heard of her death. Herb Hyde, who'd come over to play Gin Rummy and remained to put my head back on after some character unknown had knocked it off, was delighted to find himself in the middle of a murder investigation. Urban gave me all the dope in words of one syllable.
She was poisoned with cyanide. That's all there is to it. It was fed to her some way, and she died in a matter of minutes of what looked like heart failure. How did you know it wasn't a heart attack, Rogie? What made you so smart?
Well, Angela Mullins was up to see me this afternoon. She was expecting an attempt on her life.
Well, she wasn't disappointed, was she?
No! Well, you lost a client, Rogie. Did you get your dough in advance?
Yes, and I'm going to keep her out on the job. Who do you think did it, Urban?
There are only two suspects in the case. I've talked to both of them.
The niece and the nephew?
That's right.
One of them did it, huh?
They had plenty of motive.
Yeah. What do you know about it?
Well, I know the old lady's will was missing, and I know they'll divide the estate between them if the will isn't found. A couple of $1 million is a great motive for murder.
Yeah, it's a nice price.
You managed to break it down yet, Urban?
No, they both swear they didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, that's a fairly normal reaction.
Yeah, sure.
Think you can get an indictment?
The DA's thinking it over. One of them did the job all right. They were the only two people around when the old lady died. And this cyanide takes less than a minute to be effective. We got an open and shut case against one of them.
I think I'll take a run over to the Mullins house. I'll see you later, Urban.
Mr. Rogue, I didn't poison her. I want you to know that.
You might as well face it, Claire. Cyanide, that's a poison they found your aunt had died of, is one of the fastest-acting poisons known. There was nobody in the house but you and Warner at the time, was there?
No, there was just the three of us here. Paul and I were sitting downstairs here, and Auntie had just gone up to lie down for a while. Next thing we knew, she was dying.
Well, let me look around a little bit. Where did your aunt keep her important papers?
The really important ones she kept in that strong box under her bed. The strong box that the will was in.
Mm-hmm.
The police have been over the house. It isn't here.
Yes, did you have a desk?
Yes, it's in her office. The study upstairs. The study's upstairs, but you won't find anything there. Really, Mr. Rogue, I wish you'd go. The police are taking care of everything.
I want to take a look through that desk, Claire. Oh, now look, don't clout up and cry at me. I'm just trying to help you, that's all.
I didn't do it. Oh, Mr. Rogue, I wish I were dead.
There's something about a beautiful girl's tears that turns my iron will to sugar and melts my good intention away like snow in the sunshine. I comforted Claire for a while, all the time wondering whether or not I was giving all that fine philosophy away to a murderess. And then I went to work. I combed that house like a head of hair, and I didn't find the will. But I did find some pay dirt. A letter written on distinctive stationery. That little buzz I get in my solar plexus told me that I'd solved a murder. That letter and that interview with Angela Mullins in my office added up to a pointing finger which I followed right out of the house. I was on the trail of the missing strong box. I called Urban, gave him a hot tip on murder, then went to work. When I arrived at my destination, no one was home, so I let myself in through a basement window. I went to work like I only had 5 minutes to live. I started in on the top floor and hurricaned my way back into the basement before I found what I was looking for. The missing strong box with the name Angela Mullins stenciled on its lid. I put it under my arm and walked up the stairs with it. As I walked into the kitchen, I saw him standing there with a gun in his hand.
Hello, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, hello, Dr. Hall.
I see you found it.
Yes, you were a little bit too sure of yourself, Doctor.
Yes, I can see now that I was. Where did I slip up, Rogue?
I found the letter from you to Mrs. Mullins. A letter about a $50,000 note she was pressing you for.
Yes?
Well, Doc, you'd carelessly written that letter on the same stationery you had used to write me a note. The one you left in my apartment telling me to leave town. When you batted my brains out, remember?
Yes. How unfortunate. You know, Rogue, killing is like lying. One leads to another.
Well, what good's he going to do you to kill me?
You're the only person who even suspects me of murdering Angela. I tore up the note, and incidentally, I also tore up the will. There's absolutely nothing now to tie me into this murder, Rogue, except you.
Look,
and I...
Doc, you'll never get away with this.
No, Rogue, no, you... They'll never get me alive.
Well, I guess I'll have to.
Well, Rogue, I guess we got here too late.
I'd say you got here just in time. There's your murderer.
Yeah, we checked that information you gave us, Rogue.
What did you find?
Dr. Hall was the killer. Very clever job. He put enough cyanide to kill a horse into a little gelatin capsule. Then he put the capsule in the crown on Mrs. Mullen's tooth.
Oh, brother. And when the capsule melted, the cyanide hit the bloodstream. Oh, Herbert, what would you do without me? Well, that was the end of that case. When the doorbell rang, Doc got rattled and I knocked him cold. Urban was very proud of me. Dr. Hall admitted he'd put the capsule full of cyanide in the gold crown he'd made for Angela Mullins. She had been pressing him for payment of a $50,000 note, which he couldn't pay. He was executed. The will was never found, and Claire and Paul got the old lady's money. But they did very handsomely by me for getting them off the hook. And I spent the money in pursuit of Betty Callahan. She was playing hard to get in those days, but I wore down. Case of mouse catching the mousetrap. You know what I mean? This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leif Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. Be with us again next week, will you? We have a story for you entitled When the Sun Shines Through the Roof, on the Skies of Basil. Thanks for listening, and now here's Jim Doyle.
Listen again next week at this same time to hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. And by the way, Dick will soon be seen in his newest Columbia picture, Johnny O'Clock. After and between Fitch shampoos, you can keep your hair shining and manageable by using a few drops of Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic every day. Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic is not sticky or greasy, yet it gives your hair that well-groomed look.
And now the National Broadcasting Company presents Inspector Thorne in The Two Fiancés Murder Case. Tonight, the National Broadcasting Company presents the exploits of the spectacular young Inspector Thorne of the Homicide Bureau, whose investigations rank with many of the most celebrated ones in the annals of crime fiction. An investigator smart enough to claim he is dumb and modest enough to believe it. Tonight, Inspector Thorne turns to The Two Fiancés Murder Case. The scene is the fabulous penthouse apartment of Keith Cameron, the handsome and arrogant Broadway star. There is a party going on, but at the moment, Keith is out on the terrace listening to the grateful thanks of a fading actress, Elaine Martin.
Oh, Keith, I don't know how to thank you. Think of it, in only 9 hours, at 11 o'clock this morning, I'll be auditioning for John Swenson's new show. How did you ever arrange it, Keith?
That's a silly question, Elaine. You know my name is Magic on Broadway.
I know, Keith, and the show is sure to be a success. Swenson's shows always are. And I'll be back on top again where I belong.
I arranged for an audition, not a contract, Elaine.
Oh, they'll take me for the part. They must, Keith. It's been so long since I had a good part.
Since you had any part.
And I'll owe it all to you, Keith. Why don't we get married now, right now?
Elaine, you know, I'll have to prepare my public gradually for the shock. Keith Cameron married. Well, that'll come as quite a blow to a great many women.
But why must we keep it such a close secret? Why not tell our friends?
We will, Elaine, we will.
I heard you, Keith Cameron. I heard you tell Elaine you were going to marry her.
Why, Carla Carroll, what are you doing out here on the terrace?
I heard everything, Keith, about your arranging the audition for her, about your secret plans for marriage. All the things you promised me.
Now, Carla, control yourself.
Keith, why don't you deny what Carla is saying? Why don't you tell that little liar off?
Because he can't, that's why. He promised to make me the rising star of Broadway, get me a part in the new John Swenson show.
You've never been in anything but a chorus line.
Broadway needs young blood. That's what Keith said, Elaine. And he's going to marry me, aren't you, Keith?
Why, you...
Stop it! No, I can't stand emotional scenes.
So, it's true, Keith. You did promise to marry Carla, just as you promised to marry me.
No, I've had enough of this. And of the party. I want everyone to leave immediately.
You won't get away with this. I warn you, Keith. Not even the great Keith Cameron can have two fiancées and live.
And now, only 20 minutes after the arrogant Broadway star Keith Cameron has ordered his guests out of his penthouse apartment, we see him pacing the floor of his bedroom as he says to himself,
"Fools! How dare they speak to me that way? Sounds like a key. Someone at the door. Who's that? Answer me, who? Oh, it's you. What do you mean coming in like this? Wait, put down that gun! I give it! Help! Help me.
It is some time later that same night that we see the spectacular young Inspector Thorne of Homicide and his assistant Sergeant Muggan arrive at the murder apartment and speak to the frightened man who opens the door for them.
You are Jack Parker, the man who phoned in that Keith Cameron was murdered?
Yes. Yes, I am, Inspector Thorne.
This is my associate, Sergeant Muggan.
Evening. I was Keith Cameron's theatrical agent.
I know that, Mr. Parker.
I called you just as soon as I found Keith murdered.
The call came in at exactly 3 a.m. Were you in the habit of visiting your client at that hour of the morning?
Well, you don't understand, Inspector Thorne. Keith was having a party. At least that's what he told me. I was delayed by some business, but I was sure the party would still be going on.
I see. Just where is the body, Mr. Parker?
In the bedroom. Here, I'll show you.
Wait right there, please. Sergeant Muggan and I will investigate the scene of the crime by ourselves.
Boy, this is some room.
Yes, and some corpse, Muggan. The murderer didn't take any chance on missing. Those shots were fired at close range.
It's a shame. Big Broadway star like him.
Look, Muggan, look at his clothes, those marks on his hands. That gun went off while Keith Cameron was struggling with a killer, fighting for his life.
That's one fight he lost, poor guy. Well, I'll have ballistics check on the bullets, Chief. Doesn't seem to be anything else in this room that can help us.
I'm not so sure of that, Muggan. Look at Keith Cameron's dressing table.
It's an apple pie order, just like everything else in this room. Must have been a real neat sort of guy.
Yes, everything very carefully put away. That's why I wonder about that makeup kit standing on the dressing table.
Well, these actors, you know.
Well, they use makeup for the stage, Muggan, not in the evening when they're retiring.
These jars of makeup don't have any labels, Chief, just numbers on each jar.
Hey, Muggan, when the fingerprint boys come, have them go over those jars very carefully.
Sure thing, if you say so.
Well, now let's go out and talk to Keith Cameron's theatrical agent, Jack Parker. I have an idea there's a lot more he can tell us about the murder. Mr. Parker, there are a few questions I'd like to ask you.
Anything, Inspector Thorne, anything at all. As I said, I got here just about 3 o'clock, expecting to find a party. The door was open, and I walked in. I was plenty surprised to find it so quiet and empty. I called Keith, and when he didn't answer, I decided to take a look around. That's when I walked into the bedroom and saw his body. And right after that, I called you. Is there anything else you want to know, Inspector Thorne?
Yes. The truth.
What do you mean? I just...
Mr. Parker, I'm no genius, but I try to do a thorough job. Before I came up here, the superintendent of this apartment building told me that there are only two ways of getting up to Keith Cameron's penthouse apartment. Either you take the regular elevator, and the night elevator operator reports that no one came up here since the party ended, or you use Keith's private elevator, for which you have to have a key. Just how did you get up here, Parker?
All right, Inspector Thorne, I'll tell you. But it doesn't mean that I killed him.
You have a key, don't you, Mr. Parker?
Sure I have. So do a lot of his friends.
You were a friend of Keith Cameron's as well as his business agent?
Of course. Keith and I got along swell.
That's not the way I heard it, Inspector Thorne. My wife reads the Broadway gossip columns, and I remember her telling me that Cameron and his agent were about to bust up.
Oh, that's all a pack of lies, Inspector Thorne.
Then you claim that everything between you and Cameron was fine.
Perfect, Inspector Thorne. Couldn't have been better. But if you're interested in finding a trouble spot, try Elaine Marden.
Elaine Marden? That sounds familiar.
Yeah, then you've got a good memory. It's been a long time since Elaine Marden had a partner show. And she isn't getting any younger.
What is her connection with Keith Cameron?
She knows a good thing when she sees it, Inspector Thorne. And those keys I was talking about, the keys to this apartment. I know for a fact that Elaine Marden made Keith give her one of them.
Sergeant Muggan, take Miss Marden's address from Mr. Parker. And have one of the boys bring her over here. And Muggan, make it fast. This looks like a big break in our case.
Here she is, Inspector Thorne. Elaine Marden. The boys say they're sorry it took so long.
Sit down, Miss Marden.
I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. Keith's dead.
Miss Marden, when my men went to your apartment, it was almost 4 o'clock in the morning, but you weren't in.
I came along while they were ringing the bell, and then they told me.
Just where were you until then?
Out at a nightclub, the Green Feather. There were quite a few of us there from Keith's party.
Now, what happened at Keith's party, Miss Marden? I understand it ended unusually early.
Keith was an actor, Inspector Thorne, and like all actors, temperamental. All of a sudden, he asked everybody to leave. Said he wanted to be alone.
Well, there was no reason for his saying this. Nothing had occurred to upset him.
Nothing that I know of. That's when some of us decided to meet at the Green Feather. It seemed too early to go home. But I'd never have gone. Not if I'd known what was going to happen to my darling Keith.
You loved him, Miss Marden?
Oh, yes, yes. Passionately.
And did Mr. Cameron return your love?
We were going to be married, Inspector Thorne. It was still a secret, but we had our plans all made.
I see.
No, you don't see. You think I'm lying. You're wondering why the glamorous, successful Keith Cameron should marry a has-been like me. But I'll give you proof of his love.
I'd be happy to hear it, Miss Marden.
Keith loved me so much, he went to a great deal of trouble to arrange an audition for me. An audition for John Swenson's new show. You know what that means?
Well, I know that Swenson has never had a failure.
That's right. And at 11 o'clock this morning, I'm supposed to audition for him.
This is very interesting, Miss Marden.
Believe me, Keith wouldn't have gone to all that trouble for someone he didn't love.
See what's going on outside, Muggins.
Sure thing, Chief.
Hey, what's going on? I found
this guy. Hey, we got company, Chief. A boy spotted this guy hanging around outside.
This is ridiculous. If a man can't stand in the street anymore...
The police are bound to be suspicious of anyone loitering about a house where a murder has been committed.
Murder? Who is it? Tell me.
Not before you give me your name and why you're here.
I'm Steve Mitchell. And I was outside waiting for my girl, Carla Carroll.
Carla Carroll?
She was at a party here in this house.
Well, if this Miss Carroll is your girl, as you say, why do you have to wait outside while she goes to parties?
Well, she was my girl until this heel Keith Cameron started handing her a line about promising to make her a star and saying he'd marry her.
Marry her?
He's lying, Inspector Thorne. Keith never said that.
Let Mr. Mitchell continue. This gets more interesting as it goes along.
Cameron promised to marry Carla, all right. She told me. But I know I could change her mind if only she'd let me talk to her. And that's why I was outside, Inspector Thorne.
At this hour?
Well, these parties at Cameron's always in the morning. So I came over about a half hour ago and started to my wait.
Well, it's quite a story, Mitchell.
It's the truth, Inspector Thorne, every word of it. Now tell me. It isn't Carla who was murdered.
No. It was Keith Cameron. Oh,
boy, is that a relief.
Well, you don't seem very upset over the fact that a man's been killed.
Inspector Thorne, all I can think of is now everything's going to be all right between Carla and me.
That sounds like an excellent motive for murder, even to a not-too-bright cop like me.
You don't mean that I killed him?
You're a lot brighter than you pretend to be, Inspector Thorne. I think Steve Mitchell is your killer, all right, with help from his little girlfriend, Carla Carroll.
You have a great deal of explaining to do now, Elaine Martin.
What?
So Keith Cameron loved you madly, did he? He was going to marry you, and Carla Carroll, and how many others?
No, there were just the two of them.
And you did know about his promise of marriage to Carla.
All right. I did, and so did Carla. She found it out just before we all left the party. And I've been with a whole group of people all night. But where has she been, except busy murdering Keith?
That's an excellent question, Miss Martin. Come on, Muggin, let's visit Carla Carroll and get the answer.
Sure is some case, Inspector Thorne. Every time you turn around, you find a new suspect.
Now drive down this street on your right, Muggin. I think it's a shortcut to Carla Carroll's house.
Okay. Say, I got the report from the fingerprint detail on those jars of makeup that were on Keith Cameron's bureau.
Yes, Muggin?
Well, it's a funny thing. They found Cameron's fingerprints on all those jars except one.
And on that one?
No prints at all. It was wiped clean. I told him to leave that jar in your office, Chief.
Good work, Muggin. Now let's see what we can learn from Cameron's stage-struck young girlfriend, Carla Carroll.
And now, at the apartment of the stage-struck young Carla Carroll, we hear...
Of course, I'm very sorry to hear about Keith Cameron's death, Inspector Thorne, but I don't understand why you and Sergeant Muggin are questioning me.
We have it on good authority, Miss Carroll, that you and Keith Cameron were very good friends.
We were friendly, the way people in the same profession usually are, but nothing more.
Well, is it usual for a top star to be friendly with a rank beginner?
I don't know who you've been talking to, but you have your information all wrong. I am not a rank beginner. I've appeared in a sizable number of little theater productions and been in two Broadway shows.
Hmm. Well, did you have big parts in the two Broadway shows?
What if I didn't? You have to start someplace.
The well-known star Keith Cameron would be an excellent starting place up the ladder of success for an ambitious young actress.
Keith and I were just friends.
You weren't secretly engaged?
Of course not.
Miss Carroll, this is your key ring here on the table?
Why, yes.
You don't mind if I look at it?
Perhaps if you tell me your reason.
This is my reason, Carla Carroll. This key, which I took out of my pocket and which exactly duplicates one of the keys on your ring.
There are lots of keys that look alike.
But only a few which would unlock Keith Cameron's private elevator in his penthouse apartment. We can go over there and try your key.
Never mind, Inspector Thorne. That's the key to Keith's place.
And you still say you were only casual friends, Miss Carroll?
We were engaged, secretly, but it's hard to explain.
Oh, just how did Keith Cameron explain having two fiancés, you and Elaine Martin?
That's it. I mean, I didn't learn that he was also engaged to Elaine Martin until tonight at the party, but I didn't really care.
That's hard to believe.
But it's the truth. You see, at first I was kind of overwhelmed by the idea of the glamorous Broadway star, Keith Cameron, being in love with me, but after a while, I wasn't so sure I was in love with him.
And just when did you become convinced that you no longer loved him?
Tonight, when I found out about him and Elaine. My pride was hurt, but after I left, I discovered I wasn't one bit unhappy, Inspector Thorne.
And where did you go when you left the party, Miss Carroll?
I came straight home, alone.
And you've been here ever since, thinking this out.
Look, Inspector Thorne, this is ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. I didn't murder Keith Cameron. I had nothing but friendly feelings towards him. And I think you could spend your time better looking for the real murderer.
Well, I'd be happy to oblige, Miss Carroll. You don't happen to know just who that is, do you?
Maybe I do. Have you questioned his agent, Jack Parker, yet?
We spoke to him.
What did he say about that big blow-up he and Keith had the other night?
Well, not a word about any arguments. He said they got along fine.
That's a laugh. He used to fight like a cat and a dog. The other night, when Jack Parker came over to see Keith...
Get down, Carla, get down, Muggin, turn off that light. The killer's on the fire escape.
Inspector Thorne in the Two Fiancés murder case will return in just a moment. But first, it's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. And I'd like to take a moment to bring you a few highlights of our new fall schedule. Starting off on Friday, there's Screen Directors Playhouse with a full hour of drama, bringing you such stars as Charles Boyer, Loretta Young, and William Lundigan. Then on Saturday, be sure to hear Dimension X. Dimension X brings you stories of a future world, stories you won't easily forget. Then on Sunday evenings, be sure to hear Theater Guild on the Air, with a full 60 minutes of great drama brought to you with the most capable stars of both stage and motion pictures. Such people of the theater world as Helen Hayes, Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne, Betty Field, Montgomery Clift, and Basil Rathbone have agreed to appear on coming Theater Guild on the Air productions. Yes, we're proud of our new fall lineup, and we sincerely believe that our programming will bring you programs of both entertainment and importance. Friday, there's Screen Directors Playhouse. Saturday, here, Dimension X. And then on Sunday, there's 60 minutes of drama on Theater Guild on the Air. Hear all three great shows on NBC. Now back to Inspector Thorne and the Two Fiancés Murder Case. When handsome, arrogant Broadway star Keith Cameron is murdered, Inspector Thorne discovers four people who had motive to kill him. The two women whom Keith had secretly promised to marry, Elaine Martin, a fading actress, and Carla Carroll, an ambitious young actress. The other suspects are Steve Mitchell, the young man Carla jilted for Keith Cameron, and Keith's agent, Jack Parker. While Inspector Thorne is questioning Carla Carroll at her apartment, someone shoots at her from the fire escape window. Now, a few seconds later, we hear Inspector Thorne say,
Miss Carroll, are you all right?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
I can't see anyone on the fire escape, Chief. I'll run down and see if I can head him off.
You sure you're all right, Miss Carroll?
I must be. None of the shots touched me. So I was sitting right by the window.
Our killer seems to have a very bad aim. Well, now, Miss Carroll, if you're up to it, how about finishing what you started to tell me before the shots were fired?
Oh, about Keith and his agent, Jack Parker. Keith was going to fire him.
Are you sure of this?
I heard Keith threaten Jack Parker with jail. Keith said Jack had been stealing money from him and covering it up with false bookkeeping.
I got it,
Let
Chief.
Let me go.
No other than Miss Elaine Martin herself.
Let go of me. How dare you drag me in here like this?
She was downstairs, Inspector Thorne, trying to make a fast getaway.
Okay, Sergeant Morgan, let her go. Now, Miss Martin, will you explain to us what you were doing here at 5:30 in the morning?
It's very simple, really. I couldn't sleep. I was too upset about what happened to poor Keith. And I thought maybe a walk would make me feel better.
And so you walked halfway across town to Carla Carroll's house.
I had no idea Carla lived anywhere near here.
She doesn't have any gun on her, Chief, but we can search the neighborhood.
Yes, do that, Morgan. And get me a ballistics report on those bullets lodged in the wall near Miss Carroll's chair.
Right, Chief.
Just what does this mean, Inspector Thorne? Are you accusing me of being implicated in a crime?
It means, Miss Martin, that someone shot at Carla Carroll.
Inspector Thorne, I just thought of something.
What is it, Miss Carroll?
About those shots.
Yes?
Why did they come just as I was starting to tell you about the fight Keith Cameron and Jack Parker had? Who'd want to keep me from telling about that? Except Jack Parker.
Meanwhile, at the apartment of Jack Parker, the murdered Keith Cameron's business agent, we see Jack turning to Steve Mitchell, the young man who loves Carla Carroll. And Jack says angrily,
I don't believe a word of that, Steve Mitchell. You didn't come here to talk to me, but to plant that gun under the cushion of my couch. It's lucky for me I spotted you doing it.
Say, just what are you trying to pull, Parker? That gun was here all along and you know it.
Now look, you little punk. One more lie out of you and I'll...
You what?
Try to frame me, will you?
It's your gun, Parker. I didn't know a thing about it until you pulled it out from under the cushion.
Get out! Get out, you hear me? And take your gun with you.
Come in, Muggin. I think we've heard enough.
Inspector Thorne.
Thorne, what are you doing here?
I came to ask you a few questions, Parker. First, will you hand that gun to Sergeant Muggin?
With pleasure. It belongs to Mitchell here.
That's a lie. I had nothing to do with it.
All right, Mitchell. I heard all that from outside the door. Just what was it you wanted to talk to Jack Parker about?
I thought maybe he might have some ideas about who killed Keith Cameron.
Oh? When did we take you on the force, Mitchell?
He's your man, Inspector Thorne, I'm convinced.
Parker, how much money did you steal from Keith Cameron?
What?
Oh, you forgot to tell me about that, didn't you? And that Keith Cameron threatened to have you sent to jail?
How could I tell you when it never happened?
Carla Carroll says that you and Keith had an argument, that Keith threatened you with jail for mismanaging his funds.
Oh, maybe we did talk about my giving up the job as Keith's agent. But Keith never said a word about money to me.
You're changing your story, Parker. I thought you and Keith were on the best of terms.
We were. But Keith was a temperamental man, like most actors. Every once in a while, he'd talk about firing me. Next day, he'd call me up and beg me to come back.
And that's the story you want to stick to, Parker?
It's the only one, the honest truth.
Yes, I hope so, for your sake, Parker. Let's go, Sergeant.
Coming. You leaving those two alone in there, Chief?
It's all right, Muggin. You have a gun, haven't you?
Yeah, sure thing.
Well, something tells me I have the solution to the case.
What? Who did it, Chief?
Well, I want to be absolutely positive before I name any names, Muggin. Now, look, you go back to the office, round up all the reports for me, and have some of the men alerted to bring Jack Parker, Elaine Martin, Carla Carroll, and Steve Mitchell over to the murder scene at, well, let's see, make it 10:30, just 3.5 hours from now.
And you, what are you going to do, Inspector Thorne?
I'm going to visit the place where Keith Cameron used to order his special stage makeup.
And it is exactly 10:30 that morning when we see Inspector Thorne open the door of the murder apartment, and we hear him say,
"Oh, I see you're all here. All four of you had reason to murder Keith Cameron."
"I had no
That's
reason.
Not so.
Oh, please, please, now, if you'll all be quiet, I think we'll soon know exactly who that murderer is."
"Well, then you do know, Inspector Thorne. In that case, why did you have to have us all dragged down here?"
"Well, many interesting facts come to light at the scene of a crime, Jack Parker. For instance, these ledgers, which were carefully hidden in Keith Cameron's bedroom."
"Well, why tell me about them?"
"Because I've had my men check those ledgers, and they prove that you were stealing from Keith Cameron."
Well, maybe I did. But that doesn't mean I killed him."
"It means you're an awful liar, Parker. I heard you tell Inspector Thorne that Keith never accused you of stealing his money."
"You're right, Steve Mitchell. But detectives are used to having people lie to them. The way you did, too."
"Steve would never lie."
"You seem to have a very high opinion of the man you jilted for Keith Cameron, Miss Carroll."
"I didn't know what I was doing. I'm glad I woke up in time."
"In time to murder Keith Cameron?"
"You call me a liar, Inspector Thorne. Why don't you back up your words?"
"Muggin, tell us what ballistics reported about the bullets that murdered Keith Cameron and the ones fired at Carla Carroll."
"They didn't come from the same gun."
"What about the gun we took away from Jack Parker's apartment, the gun Carter and Mitchell were arguing about?"
"That's the gun that fired at Carla Carroll."
"And that gun is registered in your name, Steve Mitchell."
"Maybe it is, but it was stolen from me months ago." "Oh, don't you see how crazy this is? You can't accuse me of wanting to kill Carla, the girl I love."
"You didn't fire those shots to kill Carla, but to convince us she was innocent, because you were convinced she was guilty. You knew Carla had been back to this apartment after the party was over, because she asked you to come with her and wait outside."
"All right, Inspector Thorne, but she only came to get some letters back. Letters she'd written to Keith Cameron. And he was still alive then because he gave them to her."
"What time was that, Steve?"
"What difference does that make? He was still alive."
"I came into this apartment at 2:45, Inspector Thorne."
"That's about the time the medical examiner says he was shot."
"He was alive when Carla left, Inspector Thorne."
"And you left him in good health, Carla?"
I don't know, Inspector Thorne."
"What?"
"The bedroom door was closed when I came into the apartment. I was glad. I knew the letters were in a desk in the living room, and I got them as quietly as I could. I thought Keith was sleeping, and I knew there'd be a fight if he found me here."
"Which is probably just what happened, Inspector Thorne. He found her here. They had a fight, and she shot him."
"That's not so. It isn't. I wouldn't know how to fire a gun."
"Well, evidence bears you out on one point, Miss Martin. There was a fight between Keith Cameron and his killer."
"There, you see."
"A very important fight. The one that will convict a murderer."
"What do you mean?"
"Just this, Mitchell. I remember all I've read about how actresses need lots of beauty sleep when they're working."
"The reason for that should be obvious."
"And then I begin to wonder why a fading actress like you, Elaine Martin, should take the risk of staying out all night before an important audition."
"I told you. I just went to a nightclub with some people."
"That's not a good enough reason, Miss Martin."
"Do you know of any better one?"
"Yes. If you'd murdered a man and wanted a good alibi."
"Now, really, Inspector, this has gone far enough."
"I also started wondering in my slow way why somebody had stopped to use Keith's makeup after murdering him."
"Use Keith's makeup?"
"Yes, Mr. Parker. Someone had wiped all the fingerprints off one jar of Keith Cameron's special makeup. The only explanation I could figure out was that for some reason they'd used that jar and then had to clean it off."
"But makeup, Inspector Thorne, that...
That just doesn't make sense.
It will, Miss Carroll. I'm sure you'll be interested in this, Elaine Marden, because it concerns you.
What?
And the scratches you've been trying to cover up ever since Keith Cameron inflicted them on you in his death struggle.
Scratches? You're mad, Inspector Thorne.
I spotted them the first time I spoke to you, but I was sure I had a murderer when the makeup expert said that the jar I brought him was used especially to hide scars and blemishes and scratches.
Just what does that prove?
That after you murdered Keith Cameron, you used his makeup to hide the scratches. And you were careful to wipe your fingerprints off the jar. Too careful.
You forget. I have an alibi. I was with a great many people all night long.
Too many people. We checked them. Not one will swear that he saw you every minute of the time. No, Elaine Martin, you had plenty of chances to slip away unnoticed, murder Keith Cameron, and then hurry back. You have no alibi. And I have the evidence which proves you killed the man who had been deceiving you.
You thought of everything, didn't you, Inspector Thorne? Well, I'll tell you one more thing you didn't think of. One more thing that proves what a rat Keith Cameron was. That audition this morning, that was my last chance. My very last chance to get a part in a Broadway show. And you know what Keith told me as I was leaving his party? He told me he was going to cancel it. He told me not to bother showing up for the audition.
You admit you murdered Keith Cameron?
Oh, I admit it. I murdered him all right. But not only because he was double-crossing me with a girl like Carla Carroll. Remember that, Inspector Thorne. He was double-crossing me on everything. Everything he'd ever promised. He deserved what he got.
You'll have your chance to tell that to the jury. Take her in, Sergeant Muggin.
And so ends the Two Fiancés murder case. The part of Inspector Thorne is played by Stott Cotsworth. Direction by Edward Slattery. The script was written by Geraldine Merkin, based on the original story by Frank and Ann Hummert. This is Fred Collins inviting you to tune in again next Thursday at this same time when the National Broadcasting Company will present Inspector Thorne in The Empty Ashtray Murder Case. Monday through Friday, hear Woman in My House on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. In the meantime, there's a variety of old-time radio shows available at RelicRadio.com, alongside links to all the other shows, our forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream, with even more old-time radio. And if you'd like to help support it all, a donate button. Find more information on donations by clicking on the red donation information button. Thank you very much, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.